Today I talk to John Sarnay. John has a fascination with human psychology and the future. I talk to John about his new book, Future Next, Reimagining Our World and Conquering Uncertainty. Enjoy the interview. Welcome to the Business Bookshelf Podcast. I'm your host, Lance Pepler. Like you, I'm a lifetime learner and find books one of the best ways to do this. The purpose of this podcast, then, is to interview authors of new business books, get insight into their thinking, lives, and businesses, all in a light-friendly manner. This show is sponsored by IdeaStorm, focusing on exponential innovation and leadership. Visit www.ideastorm.co.za to book a free strategy session. Today, our guest is John Sarnay. John has a fascination with human psychology and the future that has seen him become Africa's first faculty member of Singularity University in San Francisco, a lecturer at Duke Corporate Education in Johannesburg, and an associate partner at the Copenhagen Institute of Future Studies in Denmark. He's the author of best-selling books, What's Your Moonshot, Magnetize, and Foresight. And John is also the co-founder and chief exponential officer at Future Self Academy, which we're going to talk a bit about. An author-led online platform that connects the curious to leading thinkers. So we're talking to John today about his new book, Future Next, Reimagining Our World and Conquering Uncertainty. So about the book, the future's arrived early, and it's challenging each of us to ask and answer the defining questions of our time. How will our post-pandemic society move forward? Will we ever return to the world we know? Are we witnessing the development of a new socioeconomic system and all wonderful other questions as well? So welcome to the podcast, John.
Thank you so much, Lance. Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's fantastic to have you. So John, where am I speaking to you from today?
Well, look, I mean, since COVID, I am in Cape Town, and I've decided actually not to travel for the next foreseeable future. So I'm in Clifton, Cape Town.
Well, it's a beautiful place to stay. So my yes. get to know the author or the guest question at the moment is, what things do you do around Cape Town? And if an international visitor would come and visit you, what would you take him or her to go and do for an afternoon or a day?
Oh, wow. What a great question, actually. I've never heard that question before. Look, I think the things I do on a daily basis are what people travel from the other side of the world to do. So a stroll down the prom, feet in the sand at Clifton, maybe a drink in Moulie Point, and a green juice at the market. These are my daily routines, and I think very special for people that come out of town to come and experience those things. So just the normal Cape Town, I think, is incredibly awesome. And that's what I'll do with any of my guests.
No, it sounds wonderful. Thank you, John. So now, John, could you tell us your story? You've got obviously a really, really interesting story because you didn't start doing what you're doing today. You know, it was a massive pivot at one point in your life. Could you tell us a little bit about your story and what it led up to today?
Yeah, well, I come from a single mom family, and we were financially challenged growing up. And I really became an entrepreneur out of necessity, just to have pocket money and to live a life that I wanted to live. And I became very successful financially in my 20s, and I lost all of it in my early 30s. I declared bankruptcy and then went insolvent. And you know, with insolvency, you can't even use your own name to trade, which was such a hugely emotional and depressing thing to happen after a hugely successful life in my 20s. So I spent my 30s wallowing in my victimhood, wallowing in my depression. And after a couple of years of it, I realized that I needed to get myself out of it. And I started really diving in deep into psychology and memories and relationship with money and relationship with power, et cetera, et cetera. And the next time I lifted my head, I had done so much research on it and I've dived so deep into workshops. I became some kind of specialist in this topic and I started teaching it. And my fascination with the future combined with human psychology and neuroscience has now become my work and based very much on my two bankruptcies, the financial bankruptcy that I just spoke about and my divorce, which I call my emotional bankruptcy, which happened when I was 40 years old. And the combination of those two have really put me into good stead in understanding why it is as human beings, we don't find our genius. Why is it that we are stuck in old successes? Why is it that we can't maintain a level of abundance. And so there's many different realities and many different scenarios that we can go through as human beings. And then also I combine it with categorizing and contextualizing the future to help organizations and individuals prepare themselves for the options or futures that are coming. And I actually call myself a futures strategist, which is multiple futures that are available to all of us, depending on our internal dialogue, our memories, the stories we tell ourselves, and the depth and understanding of what the future looks like. So here I am today. I'm a lecturer. I am an author and an entrepreneur. I help organizations and governments prepare for the future, utilizing my own methodologies and my own processes, which link this neuroscience and the future together. And to be honest with you, I really haven't seen anybody else do this. It seems quite unique globally and has put me in good stead and has seen a rise in success in my career. Thank goodness.
Absolutely. So just one follow-up question shortly, and then we get on to your fantastic new book. So when you were in the cocoon phase, between the different areas, did you do another job or did you keep things going to keep the lights on? And then I've read and heard that you started small. How was that in the between stage, between the bankruptcy and the divorce and where you are now?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Good question. So for about 2 or 3 years, I didn't know what to do. I remember running on Table Mountain and just screaming and actually just like grunting with anger, gutturally trying to get rid of this frustration, depression, anger. I mean, so many things were going on inside me that I did a lot of healing. I went and met lots of different healers. I really dived deep into workshopping. I did odd jobs here and there. You know, I was like a personal trainer remember that in my 20s, I was hugely successful. I had 6 restaurants, I had sports cars, I had retail stores, I had a huge house in Bryanston, and all of it got taken away from me. So here I was, I wasn't able to afford a 6,500 rand rent in Muli Point, which was the cheapest place I could find in Muli Point in by the ocean. And I still couldn't even afford to pay that rent. So there was a lot of that going on. So I spent a big chunk of my time just doing workshops and trying to survive, but diving deeper into my psychology. And then I started a consultancy called The Fresh Ingredient. And this was a little consultancy that was helping hospitality businesses. And because of my experience in restaurants for my 20s, I started helping small cafes and small restaurants. And small cafes and restaurants don't really have a lot of money. So my fee to them was 5,000 Rand a month to help them. And like I said to you, I had 6,500 Rand rent. So I was just trying to cover my rent and maybe some food and I'm talking early 30s, right? So, I mean, this is not right here in Cape Town. It's not like a long time ago, but anyway. And I remember that first restaurant I helped had a huge boost in turnover because they were a health cafe. And as a futurist or as somebody who's got his eye on the trends, there was no superfoods on their menus. And if you think about like 10 years ago, nobody knew what superfoods were. And so we added a few superfoods to their menu and relaunched the menu and bang, it really just did well. So my name started to spread. And 6 months later, I had no hospitality businesses I was helping. I was helping like a cement business. I was helping an IT business.
Wow.
And I started to realize whether you're selling pizzas, superfoods, nappies, or consultation strategy sessions, it's all really the same thing. Is you've got to understand your consumer really well. You've got to understand trends and you've got to understand your own psychology, no matter what part of commerce you're in. And so that little consultancy merged with an international ad agency and we created something called Future Collective. And we started helping bigger brands dissect and contextualize and prepare for the future. And then when I turned 40, I got divorced and I decided that I needed a fresh start. So I closed that agency down. I actually gave it to my partner. I let him run it. And then I just went into a 6-month cocoon. I had about 70,000 Rand left after trying to start the consultancy and all that sort of stuff. And I just decided I needed to go into another healing, another cocoon. And I came out of that becoming a speaker. And my speaking career just really took off because I think the depth of vulnerability and honesty that I speak about on stage, also that I use my own very personal examples that everybody else is going through. In fact, every time somebody reads my first book, What's Your Moonshot? Most people say to me, it seems like you were speaking about my life. And I'm like, do you know what? All of us have got this life. All of us have got this bankruptcy, depression, victimhood, and trying to get ourselves out of it becomes the difference between greatness and average. And so really, it's just about this authenticity, vulnerability, and sort of surprising topics that I combine. And now I'm on my fourth book, and now I've worked with the ANC, the Western Province government. I've worked with the Abu Dhabi government. I've worked with the Dubai government. I've worked with the Zimbabwean government, believe it or not. I try to help them a little bit. So, and besides, every other blue chip company around the world now invites me to work on strategy sessions and do talks for them. So it's been a phenomenal 5 years. But, you know, like I explained, everything has been a process of unlearning to relearn, documenting it, teaching it, moving on to unlearn, to relearn, to documenting it, to teaching it, to unlearn. And this has become my life right now, is that every time I learn something, I try and dissect it in a way that I can help other people learn it. And then I move on to the next lesson. And so this combination of grit, momentum, and constantly trying to improve have really got me in a very comfortable and successful place at the moment.
Yeah. Well, you're an inspiration to me, definitely.
Thank you, Lance.
So we're talking to you about your fourth book, Future Next, Reimagining Our World and Conquering Uncertainty. So thank you so much for the book. When this podcast is released later on this week, because I'm speaking to you on the Monday, and your launch is the following day on the Thursday. So hopefully people, maybe one or two people, will listen to the podcast and register for the book launch on Thursday. But can you tell us about the purpose of writing it and an overview of it? And maybe first, how do you register for the launch?
Thank you. Well, 19th of November, 6:30 for 7 p.m. You can go on to my Instagram link in my bio. There's a linktree.com/John Sarnay. On top of that link, you'll see join the Future Next hybrid book launch. And you go straight into something called School of Modern Wisdom. Mm. And in School of, this is my new online digital school that I'm building. And in there, you can register for the event. If you're in Cape Town, please let us know that we can bring you into the live audience. If not, we have huge LED screens where we'll be zooming a whole bunch of people's faces onto the LED screens and doing this hybrid event. So we're very excited about it. So it'd be wonderful for everybody to join in. So thank you for that opportunity.
Well, I've registered and we'll definitely be attending.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So the reason I started writing this book is, before COVID-19 happened, I was writing another book called The Evolution of Value. And when COVID-19 happened, I started to realize that anything speaking about leadership or consumerism or socioeconomic systems or the future needed to have a lens of COVID-19 on it. Obviously, being one of the biggest transitions in our lives, we needed to mention it in a way or really just filter ourselves through it. And so I started writing a new book as soon as COVID-19 happened. And I think actually in hindsight is to try and just busy myself, because I had had one of my biggest contracts ever in my whole life that I'd ever signed with a global trend company that had me at 8 of their top global symposiums around the world, opening the conference for them. Well, I actually was on stage with Simon Sinek and Bear Grylls last week on an online symposium with them. But this got canceled, and it was depressing because it was a multi-million rand contract. And so when I retracted to my family farm, I really wanted to just think about things, heal myself, just try to figure out what was going on in the world. So I started writing the book, and the first part of the book is called Future Now. Mm. In other words, what you do in the now will prepare you for the future. And I share 8 different tools that I use to get myself into a better state of elegant decision-making rather than panic decision-making. Mm. And so one of the ones, for example, is mourning your future memories, saying goodbye to those expectations that you had because the world has changed, and start to redevise new expectations, new projections, and new intentions for the future. Mm. So I've got 8 of those tools. The second part of the book is called Future How. And this part is called, how do we go about reimagining a new socioeconomic system that's more fair, more transparent, and more trustworthy to the whole world population? I think we can all say without doubt that there are some incredible technological advances going on in our lives. We live in a digitally abundant world today, but we still have homelessness. We still have lots of people not educated. We still have 60% of the youth in South Africa unemployed. I mean, it's just ridiculous what's going on around the world, where we have these uber wealthy people, and then you have this middle class and lower class that are just being stifled and strangled by the systems that are set up by this capitalist machine that's kind of lost its way. Because I think that capitalism requires some tending and some gardening. And it seems like we're in a jungle right now, not in a garden. And so I think there needs to be a real readjustment of our idea of what success looks like, because for the longest time, success has been earn as much money as you can and buy as much crap as you can. That's success, and then I'm going to die. Yeah. And really, that just doesn't make sense, because if anybody listening to this knows, when you make money, for the first little while, it's amazing, and you buy your first sports car. By the time you get onto your third sports car, it's all pointless, meaningless, rubbish. It just doesn't really matter. You become blind to these things. And I know this from my own experience. So I was writing this part of the book, and I realized that I wasn't an economist, and I really needed an economist's viewpoint. So I sent it to a good family friend, Iraj Abadian, who is a globally renowned economist. He helped write the South African Constitution as far as economics are concerned, a professor of economics, and a profound thinker. And I asked him to read it, and he read it, and he said, look, I'm in principle, I'm very much exactly in the same boat as you. I don't want to be advising people to going back to normality, because normality wasn't good. It was just familiar. And so let's try and build a new sort of booklet, a guidebook, to try and get people to reimagine a new socioeconomic system. And he joined me, and he started writing the economic section of what I needed for the book. And then the third part of the book, we decided to make it a guidebook. And this is really called Future Next. This is really about, what do you do to become an active member of this new society? Mm. Rather than sitting on the sidelines and complaining about the government, about racism, about feminism, about masculinity, you name it. You know, if you're a white person, you'll have reasons to complain. If you're a black person, you'll have reasons to complain. If you're a tall person, a short person, a green person, a male, a female, it just doesn't really matter, right? So what we've got to realize is that in order to become active members of this new society, we all need to step up. We all need to realize that we are the population. We are the future. It's like when you're sitting in traffic and you're complaining about traffic, guess what? You are the traffic. What are you complaining about? Then get out of the traffic. And it's the same principle here, is we are the future. So isn't it like it's the government, it's the past, it's the dollar rand exchange. You can use any example or any excuse you want. And so the last part of the book is just a guidebook to help entrepreneurs, citizens, employees, employers, and possibly policymakers to have a new conversation, to have a new ideation of what Future Next could be like. And so we're very excited, and we are doing lots of press and podcasts and radio interviews at the moment, trying to get people to adopt a new conversation called Future Next.
Cool. Great. So right at the beginning of the book, John, you talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If I can touch on that briefly. And you know, self-actualization is at the top, and then, you know, shelter and your basic needs are at the bottom. And you kind of talk about how that's been changed, or, you know, people have gone down the Maslow hierarchy of needs almost during COVID, while they're focusing on, you know, their own provision and their own, like, going forward. And I want to add that to my next question around purpose, because the purpose is the hottest business trend at the moment. You know, companies need to have a purpose, individuals need to have a purpose. And so how does purpose relate to that changing of the Maslow hierarchy of needs? Do you need to have self-actualization, and at the same time, you need to cater for your actual essential needs, you know, at the same time?
So let's just realize that the world that we live in doesn't look for you to find your purpose. It looks for you to become accomplished. And accomplishment and purpose are very different. So when people think self-actualization, they're trying to get another degree to get higher up in the corporation or to make more money. That's not self-actualization. That's accomplishment. That's self-accomplishment. And we know that when you're accomplished, you're not necessarily happy, because you can have the trappings of the car, the job, the salary, the title, the money. And guess what? You're miserable. You're a drug addict. You're alcoholic. Mm. But you're driving a G-Wagon. And now what? And so guess what? You just haven't reached the purpose. So I think the whole idea of self-actualization has been bastardized because of the doctrine of growth. And this is what we tap into the book. It's like the narrative, the story we are living as a society. We have created this animal called the doctrine of growth. In other words, you grow at every opportunity that you can. Don't worry about the environment. Don't worry about employees. Don't worry about anything. Just grow. And we see this around the world, where people fire thousands and thousands of people to get shareholders happy. As long as we've got the profits coming in, no matter, nothing else matters. And this is a ridiculous, ridiculous notion. And we mustn't confuse this ideation of the doctrine of growth with self-actualization.
Mm.
This is very different. Self-actualization is realizing that you have a genius, a pocket of genius above you. how you access this genius is not necessarily through a degree or a corporate ladder or through a higher paying business. This access to your genius is based on you following your excitement, your passion, what makes you come alive, what makes you make time disappear. So let's just bank that idea. The second thing we must realize is that we were all running and chasing this idea of self-actualization. And then COVID happened. And all of a sudden, the most important question we were asking is, am I going to survive this?
Yeah.
Is my family going to survive this? Do I have my community around me? Do I have enough cash flow to see me through this? Self-actualization was the last thing you were worrying about, or survival. And so this reset to tell us, look, what is the most important thing for you? How are you prioritizing your life? Because all of a sudden, we've realized that we never spent enough time with our families. All of a sudden, we realize that we don't have to travel around the world to do a talk. We can do it on Zoom. And so I think this reset has given us an opportunity to rethink self-actualization. It's to actually come down to it and say, look, you know, the thing that makes us depressed is two things. One, when somebody controls us, when we're under control. And two, not living a life on purpose. And you know that the rates of depression and suicide have skyrocketed since capitalism and corporations started to get hold of society. Why? Because your job becomes meaningless. You're just a paper pusher in between this huge corporation and conglomerate. And two, clock in, clock out. You're under control. This is what creates addictions. This is what creates depressions. And so this world of work that we come from has created robots and following the doctrine of growth. And very few people are actually accessing purpose. And so what we have to do is rethink success, rethink what it means to access our genius and how we can bring that to the world. And somebody asked me in one of my talks, what's the meaning of life? Like I'm some sort of Gandhi. But anyway, my response impressed me as well. My response was, your reason for life is to access your genius and share it with the rest of humanity. That's it. Because if you don't access your genius and you don't share it with humanity, what was the point of you being here? What was the real point? Nothing. So we have a lot of healing to do individually and as a society in order to get down to what self-actualization means, to get real with our purpose, and to really understand that being in a school, getting the right degree and being in the right university is not finding your purpose. It's finding accomplishment. They're vastly different.
Thanks, John. So I belong to an organization that was birthed from Singularity University, which you're obviously very aware of and you are a member of. And what we're saying is that the future is either, a Mad Max future or a Star Trek future based on exponential technologies and how things are going and with the world. So can I ask you, like, maybe this is a huge question, but how do you see the future? Are you optimistic? Do you see a bright future, or do you see more of a future of struggle leading to a bright future? How do you see the future looking?
Well, look, I think you're going to have two types of futures. You're going to have digital dictatorships, which you're already starting to see in China and Russia. And you're also going to have blockchain democracies, which is going to be utopia. And so I think you'll have two types of futures, as in our reality is a duality. You can't have light without dark and dark without light. So you'll always have those people that are trying to indoctrinate, control, manipulate. And you'll also have the societies that are inspiring, collaborative, and wanting to help everybody. Look at the vast difference between living in middle America rather than on the sides of America. Think about the difference of living in Scandinavia or in Russia. These are close enough to each other, but are living absolute parallel realities. And if you think about it, the Republican Party in America is so scared and so fearful of things changing. And the Democratic Party just wants to open up more, to collaborate more, and to include more. Now, we must realize that there isn't one future. We have our own very individual futures based on the stories we tell ourselves and the relationship we have with money and power and creativity and our genius. And then what we have is they have the broader strokes of what sort of reality do you want to choose to live in, this dictatorship or this blockchain democracy? So I don't think there is one future. I think there are multiple futures. In fact, I think if you really want to get down to it, I think there's 7.5 billion futures, because I used to have a neighbor, used to live in my building next to me in Cape Town. And he lived a miserable life. He, according to him, the whole world was at war. Everybody was trying to kill the Jews. He's Jewish, but some sort of weird, I've got lots of Jewish friends, and none of them like this, but he used to go on these rants on social media that the whole world's trying to kill all the Jews and the whole of Seapoint was just a drug war. And I was living one floor away from him and I was traveling business class and traveling around the world, earning dollars, doing talks and living my dream. Mm. And I was one person, one floor. I mean, we were talking literally 5 meters away from me. So now you tell me, what do you think his future is like? And what do you think my future is like? So I don't think there is one future and there are multiple futures and you have to choose which one you want to live in.
Yeah, fantastic. We all need to decide how we're going to live our lives. So johnsinai.com, your website that you've got, it's an awesome website. I really love it. I've never actually seen a website quite like it. What can people see if they go to johnsinai.com? They've got books and online courses and coaching and all sorts of different things if they go there.
Well, thank you for the compliment. It's about to change. In fact, in a couple hours' time, it's changing to a brand new website. I redo my brand and I redo my website and my digital storefront every year. Mm. So every time I launch a book, I launch it with new branding, a new look, just a whole new thing.
Yeah.
So on the services that I've started to create post-COVID or during COVID are masterclasses. So I run these 5-day masterclasses, one starting at the end of this month. I call them Forge the Future masterclasses, where we take you through 5 days, 1 hour a day of trying to help you perceive a future that's more abundant and more optimistic. Also get you to understand that what the future of work looks like and the future of consumer behavior looks like. You can also join School of Modern Wisdom, which will go live in a couple of weeks' time, where I'm taking all my live masterclasses and talks and making them online courses. You can link to Future Self Academy, which is all nonfiction author-led online courses, which are based on their nonfiction books. And then book me for keynotes, webinars, and workshops, and also read some of my blogs and watch some of my videos. So we try to make it as an all-encompassing online digital storefront. Mm.
And that Future Self Academy, which is superselfacademy.com, you really got fantastic authors on there, like Arthur Goldstuck and Dean Furman and Eric Kruger, which I'll get to now with your podcast, and Ian Russell and Graham Codrington. Really fantastic group of people that you've got on that website.
Thank you so much. They really are great. But our aim is to build it up to 1,000 authors. We're only on 33. So, you know, you can't go into exclusive books and open up your store with 30 books in there. Many thousands of books.
Yes.
And so we're on a long way to go to build up our library. And so we're in the process of building up the library right now. We believe that books are amazing, but they need to be dissected in different ways because not all of us have the time to read books. Some of us just have time to do 10 minutes a day or want to dive deeper into a book. So because of that, we've seen the rise of Audible, Kindle, Blinkist. And so we believe that we're in the next iteration where we take the book and we dissect it into an online course, which you can do 10 to 15 pages of it in a module. We call it a nano course. Mm. And in 10 minutes, you can hear me talk about the future or Graham Condrington talk about leadership or Arthur Goldstuck talk about preparing your kids for the future. So we try to break it down into 10-minute modules as well as a full online course that's gamified and can help you dive deeper into that author's thought leadership.
And then it's really affordable pricing. Like I just looked at, say, the Graham Codrington course here, and it's not super expensive. It seems very, you know, it seems open to almost anyone to be able to do the course.
Well, that's exactly what we wanted to do. You know, we think the time of courses being very expensive are over. And also by the time we get to about 250 authors, we'll go into a subscription mode where for like $14 a month, you can do as many courses as you want. So we're in the process of redesigning it and redeveloping it right now. You know, with any tech startup, you're continuously pivoting, trying new things. And this is, I mean, already what you're looking at right now is like 6 iterations in and we're still not even finished. So it's constant iteration.
Constant experimentation. Now, you've also got a podcast called The Expansive, which I think I might have listened to every single episode of. Maybe not the really, really earliest ones, but when you say you were on your farm, I listened to all those episodes.
Thank you so much.
Oh, that's fantastic. So how did you come up with a podcast and how do you position it now? Is it sort of a lead into your business or is it really just for itself, just as a knowledge sharing sort of avenue for you to share your thoughts with the world?
Yeah, look, I mean, Eric, I became friends with Eric many years ago and I watched him diligently get his master's in coaching, and I watched just how pedantic and particular he was in developing of his business. And he asked me for some advice from here to there. And so we just became friends and we started chatting. And then I said to him, look, why don't you hire me? Let me hire you. And one, to support your business, but two, just to appreciate that you've gone into all this effort into becoming a executive coach of the masters. Mm. And after about three or four sessions, I said to him, look, I actually don't like this. He's like, why? Am I doing something wrong? I said, no, not at all. I just don't like talking about myself for an hour. Why don't we just get together and just like conversate rather than just being about me all the time? So I said, cool. So we started chatting, and about three chats in, he said, let's just start recording these because there's a lot of gold that's coming out of them. So initially I didn't think much of it. I was like, yeah, okay, if you want to record them, that'll be great. And then next week he said to me, what if you think we make it a podcast? I'm like, look, I know nothing about podcasts. I listen to them, but I don't know how to do them. He says, no, I'll do everything. But if you're happy to record one every week, then let's do one. So, and my word of the year then was expansive. And I said to him, yeah, cool. Let's call it the expansive. He's like, great. I like the name. We started recording it. And about four episodes in, we were number one in South Africa, which was just like a ridiculous. We were just recording it, having fun. I was sitting in Copenhagen and Eric messaged me on WhatsApp and he was like, dude, I'm like, what's up? He's like, have you seen the rankings of the podcast? I'm like, I didn't even know there was rankings. He's like, here's a link. And we were number two. And Bruce Whitfield was number one. And the next day we were number one. And I was like, oh my God. And so it's really just become the friendship that Eric and I have developed, which is really great to share that stuff. And also it's become an unintended business tool, sales tool. We didn't expect it to become that, but it's really has become that. And it's just a lot of fun to do. And, you know, for the last sort of 6 weeks ago, so we only recorded two episodes because I wasn't in the mood. I was feeling a bit down. So was he. So we just didn't record. And now we've started recording again. So yeah, it's as raw and vulnerable as possible. And that has really got a lot of people from around the world excited about it. So we're just carrying on with it and we're rebranding it. And yeah, we're going to be pushing it again next year.
No, and I encourage everyone to listen to those last two or three episodes because you're right. They are raw and very, very real, which I really enjoyed. So you got 15,000 followers plus on LinkedIn. You would take a few more, I imagine. How else can people contact you? They can contact you on LinkedIn, and then I presume on your website they can reach out to you there.
Well, you know, it's so funny you talk about LinkedIn. I've just hired a company to move me to 1 million followers. That's their goal. Yeah. So look, you know, when you know, you, that is the perfect response to an intention, right? And I write about it in What's Your Moonshot, is that if people don't laugh nervously around you when you tell them their moonshots, or just think you're stupid, you are not thinking big enough. And so thank you for that laugh, because that says exactly what I wanted it to say. So the thing for me is, look, I put an intention out to be on stage with Simon Sinek, and I did it. And I put an intention out to earn X amount of dollars for a talk, which is just a staggering number. And it happened a few times.
Amazing.
And so I really think our intentions and expectations do deliver, because it's what our brains start looking for to confirm to us that is what we want. So I've just hired a company to help me become a voice of LinkedIn. So we have a lot of work to do. You know, I've got four books, so we have a lot of content. So yeah, LinkedIn is a great place. Instagram is a great place, but you can get hold of my team at hello@johnsarnay.com and we'll get back to you whatever you need.
Well, that's what I did, and we're very responsive. So thank you so much. And Adam Grant's got 3.2 million. So maybe that should be the target. I'm not sure. Anyway.
No. Look, understand. The great thing about America is that you are speaking to an audience of 300 million plus, of which many of them are affluent according to world standards, right? Yeah. So you just have a very captive market. And so that New York Times bestseller list or the Washington Post bestseller list, once you get onto those, you immediately have this huge upswing of numbers. And so, yes, they're very good at what they do, but their market is also much bigger and much more open than ours. So, yes,
absolutely.
If to get one of our books into that list and also to grow it exponentially like they do.
No, super. I'm sure you will. So thank you so much for joining me today and us today. I'm John, and well done on Future Next. Many more books in the future, I presume. And good luck with the book launch on Thursday, one day after this episode's released. I hope it brings a few people to the event, and I'll definitely be attending. So thank you so much for talking to us today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you, Lawrence, and good luck.
And I hope you, the listener, found this as interesting and useful as I did. I'll have all of John's details in the show notes, his website, etc. If you'd like to contact me, then please do. My email is lance@ideastorm.co.za, and the website is www.ideastorm.co.za. And so until next time, goodbye.